we get on board the telephone line and welcome into the program our friend Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. Hello, Bob.
Good afternoon.
Let's get to the gist of the situation involving our Red Sox. Why is it so hard to repeat as a World Series champion, Bob?
Well, you know, historically minded people go back, and of course the Yankees won 20 countless times between 1921 and 64 when that was a whole different landscape. There's a spread of talent. There's that's all. I just think there's a lot of diffusion of talent, and some years things go your way, and you don't get injuries. And I mean, with the Red Sox, let's face it, the pitching staff that they envisioned never materialized in any coherent way. They never had a consistent rotation of people who were pitching up to their very hefty paychecks. That never happened, that there was any kind of consistency. That one little run in July just prior to the eight-game losing streak that really turned the season around negatively for good. But it's just hard, and there's competition. And I know it's the only sport. The other three sports, the big team sports, have produced back-to-back champions since the last time it happened in baseball. I'm aware of that. And maybe no one has the total definitive answer. Maybe there is just the idea that every season's different, like, you know, no two seasons are alike, like snowflakes, as they say, blah, blah, blah. That's all. But in the case of the Red Sox, I think you can definitely trace the idea that, the pitching in one way or the other did not materialize. They scored enough runs to win, theoretically, as many or more as last year by the time it's all said and done. But they have given up a lot more runs. That's simple.
Was Dave Dombrowski the scapegoat for that bad pitching, or was that a deserved departure from the team?
People, it's going to be tough to defend the expenditure based on the history of the people involved. Chris Sale has proven to be somewhat of a fragile flower, if you will, as talented and great as he is when he's on and when he's healthy. Price has changed from whatever he was at his peak into something less reliable physically. And, of course, Eovaldi immediately went south after they gave him the money, which was almost a gratitude thing for what he did in the World Series. And that didn't materialize either. But, you know, Dombrowski in general, look, he did the job he was hired to do. They knew who he was. They can't say there was any false advertising. When he came in with the farm system that they handed him, he used it the way he traditionally does. He used it to stockpile new talent, proven talent, and trade away some of the prospects. And they wound up winning a World Series as a result and winning a couple of divisions before that. And isn't that the idea? How many teams in baseball, let me put it this way, how many franchises can we enumerate, including franchises that have never won anything, literally, that would trade the experience of the Boston Red Sox in the last 4 years from the time Dombrowski walked in the door for what they had? The answer is plenty. And so we just have a different perspective here in Boston, born out of the fact that all those days of angst are over, and we've won four times in the last 15 years.
It would seem from people who understand the salary cap better than I do that there's no way that both Mookie Betts and J.D. Martinez can come back, and so how do you think that plays out?
Well, I don't know. It's just sad. It's just unfortunate that's where we are if it can't be worked out, because obviously Martinez was the key ingredient last year that opened up the door for everything else to happen in that lineup. He remember that the great cry of 2017 was that they didn't have a power hitter, they didn't have a cleanup guy, and they got one, and now he's going to have he will wind up driving in 100 runs after his slow start again. And he's had another excellent year, not quite as dynamic as last year, but another excellent year. Mookie Betts is an all-time player in Red Sox history if he stays. And if he doesn't stay, it's going to be one of the handful of greatest short runs in the history of the franchise. They're right up there with the best 5 years of everybody, including the sainted Ted Williams himself. So, and maybe the second best one ever in Red Sox history. I really hope they can find a way to keep Mookie Betts. I don't want to see Mookie Betts get away. If it's inevitable that JD goes, it's a problem. It's definitely a problem, and maybe they can find a way to fix it. But I don't know for sure. Whoever is entrusted with the job will have an enormous task ahead of him or her. You know, the female in the mix. get the job done.
We were talking about this the other day. The hardcore fans remember that not every September in the last 40, 50, 60 years has been filled with pennant races. And I kind of enjoy watching these games that you're just watching for your love of baseball. But it was sure brightened last week by that wonderful story with Mike Yastrzemski coming to Fenway Park for the first time and Granddad Carl getting to see him. That was quite a couple of days.
You know, if you had asked me 3 weeks ago if Carl himself would have been a willing participant in the hoopla, I would have said, I don't know. Yaz might really hide on this one. But no, Yaz, he outdid himself by the standards that he's established, you know, over the last 40 years since his retirement, 36 to be precise, and was a very willing participant in everything, and that was wonderful. It was obviously gratifying for his grandson that Grandpop would do what he did and take part in it. I'm glad he did. You know, that was a breath of fresh air. That was a wonderful little diversion at the end of a disappointing season, no question. I would just say this about the enjoying the games for their own sake. I would love to be able to do it better, but baseball, thank God, is going to get rid of this 40-man roster in September. The pitching thing is a mockery. The games are mockeries of baseball. They should not be allowed. There was another one last night, not us, but there was a 4-hour and 4-minute game, Twins and Royals, was it? 12-8, 15 pitchers, 4-0-4, 9 innings. And the Red Sox are no stranger to that kind of that's not right. That's against the laws of nature. You shouldn't have 4-hour, 9-inning games.
So I take it you're in support of the rule change to require a minimum number of batters for relief pitchers?
I would like to have the debate. I'd like to talk to people out before I go that far. I just don't want the roster expansion. As a matter of fact, Rich, I think that it makes far more sense to have a 40-man roster in April.
Right.
Not in September. April, when you're paring things down and find out who you want. And then in September, the theoretically, for enough teams, the most important games of the season are played in a far different manner than they've been played the first 5 months. This has always strained credulity, has always been illogical, and how baseball has allowed it to maintain itself all these years and decades and literally a century and a half, I don't understand. I'm glad, thank God, they're going to get rid of it. But meanwhile, we have to endure it, and we have to have farces with 15, 16, 17 pitchers in games, 4-hour, 9-inning games. That's not baseball proper. That's not proper baseball.
Records crushed this year for home runs in Major League Baseball. Have you picked up one of the baseballs? Can you tell the difference?
No, I haven't, but I'll take all the anecdotal evidence. It seems to be universal. It absolutely, and then look at the AAA. You know the numbers in AAA. Mm. The uptick in home runs this year, the increase in home runs is beyond. It's breathtaking. It's staggering. So they're using the same baseball in AAA, and the same thing is happening, which means that 90% of this is the baseball, and that's what's happening. And it's in addition to the uppercut swing and the launch angles and all that stuff. Fine, but it's the ball. And they got to do something. This year's record shouldn't even count. I can't go that far. But we're going to have to look back at this year. If they don't do something and change it by 2020, we're going to look back and see 2018-19 as the aberrational year. The numbers are absolutely ridiculous.
We're talking with Bob Ryan here on Downtown. You had Brad Stevens and Doc Rivers on your podcast. Is it still the shadow, the legend of Red Auerbach that makes that Celtics head coaching job one of the more special jobs in all of sport?
Well, Red is connected with a basketball franchise as anybody has ever been. I mean, there's no comparable person in the game today, such as, because of the changing world, but as who dominates the landscape as Red Auerbach did in that capacity as coach and then general manager from 1950 when he joined the Celtics. Although, go back to 46 when his team won the first regular season championship. He was a 28-year-old brash coach who talked his way into a job with the owner of the Washington Capitals, Mike Uihlein, on the basis of selling him the idea that he could get players, that he had contacts from the Navy specifically, and that he could get players. And he did, and he produced Bob Ferrick, and who was a great early player in the league. And they didn't win the playoffs, but he won the regular season. And then he finally got fired in 49 by Ben Kerner at Tri-Cities. That got hired by Walter Brown on the advice of the sports writer Cabal that he had to advise him what to do, since Walter Brown knew nothing about basketball. And he became Red Auerbach. And so from 1950 until he died in 2007, he was the towering off the court figure in basketball. There's nobody comparable.
And right up there close, though, has to be one Bill Russell. And look, most of Twitter we know is an absolute cesspool. But one of the great things about Twitter is that Bill Russell is out there tweeting every once in a while.
Yeah, not funny that he would have done it. I wouldn't have bet that one either. But yeah, he does make use of it. Yeah, I got myself involved in a Russell thing because somebody tweeted out, I guess it was Colin Coward, was it?
Yes, I think it was.
Yeah. Yeah, about Brady being the greatest team sport athlete in Boston history. Well, first of all, no city has a comparable roster of candidates to match Boston.
Mm.
We're blessed. We've got arguably the greatest hitter. We got the greatest hockey player. Don't listen to anybody tell you otherwise. And Bobby Orr. We have the greatest winner in American sports history, and Bill Russell. And we've got backup candidates such as Larry Bird, Bob Cousy. And now we've got Tom Brady, and absolutely Tom Brady is on the Rushmore of Boston. But he's not the greatest team sport athlete in Boston history. That trophy was retired 50 years ago. And people say, well, it was an 8-team league, and it was this and it was that. All I know is this. You can only play in the world that you live in. And from 1955 to 1969, 14 years built on the calendar, Bill Russell competed for 16 championships, two NCAAs, an Olympics in 56, and 13 NBA championships. And his teams won 14, and he was the primary reason each of the 14 times. So that kind of settles the argument in terms of greatest winner. You know, whether he would be as comparable today, well, I know if he came into the game today, two things. He'd lead the league in block shots and rebounding. They wouldn't win the championship every year, no, but he'd win more than anybody else.
I know you're a fan of the Beatles channel on Sirius XM, and a friend of our show, Peter Asher, hosted a wonderful countdown that they do every once in a while of the best Beatles songs of all time. It's hard to pick, but if you had to, what do you think is the greatest?
I'm glad you brought that up, because first of all, I'm a big fan of Peter Asher's show on Saturdays. It's terrific.
And he's got a new book coming out, too.
Saturdays was particularly compelling. I learned a lot. God, I learned a lot that day. Yours truly, 9 o'clock this coming Wednesday, will be a guest on the Beatles channel.
Whoa.
And it's the result of my picking up on the Labor Day Top 100. And I got myself involved in the Beatles discussion, and they found out about it. And they also know that I appeared on the Sirius XM Sinatra channel doing an hour of music in August of 2016 for popular music. And they kind of like what I did there. But anyway, I'm going to be on the Beatles channel. I told the gentleman, Mr. Stephen Leeds, who called me, I said, it's funny, my favorite Beatles song finished number 83, which tells you how many great songs the Beatles have lapping in the field. And I don't want to hear about the Stones or Springsteen or anybody else in terms of sheer volume of wonderful songs in the rock and roll era. They lap the field. My favorite Beatles song is Things We Said Today.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It finished number 83. And I would say also the other funny little fact, When I'm 64, finish number 63.
I saw you tweet about that.
I really find it hard to believe the Things We Said Today would finish as low as 83. But we all have our taste, and that's my thing, and that's fine. It's not somebody else's.
My favorite is For No One. I'm not sure where that finished up on.
Oh, I like that. I don't know where that finished either. Oh, my God. There are so many. I mean, I did in preparation for my appearance, I've been going over the albums, album by album. And, for me, there's there's original Beatles, old Beatles, and then new Beatles. And the dividing line is probably, clearly it's Sgt. Pepper. That was a division. Mm. And the original Beatles, I thought they peaked with Rubber Soul. I think that was a flawless album. I don't think there was a bad song on Rubber Soul, or even anything less than a really good song. That was my particular favorite. But, you know, some people are partial to Sgt. Pepper. Some are partial to the White Album. I respect that. But I don't like from after Rubber Soul, I don't like them as much as I did before. It doesn't mean I dislike. No, there's lots of good stuff on Sgt. Pepper. Lots of good stuff on the White Album. But I just think that in that original incarnation, you know, and their original self, then they wanted to get more. They got bored. They got bored. John and Paul got bored, and George was off, you know, with the Zen thing, and he was off there with the Maharishi, and Ringo was always willing to go along with the flow, but he got into country. He was into, of course, I have to tell him my guilty pleasure song. I'll give you a thing in advance. My absolute guilty pleasure Beatles song in my top five. You ready?
Act Naturally.
Act Naturally.
Yeah, I knew it.
I love it. I know it's a cover, Buck Owens, and that's fine. Doesn't matter. I totally am. Completely love Act Naturally.
I was so glad to see them include the Beatles version of that in the Ken Burns Country Music documentary.
Oh, they did. I haven't seen. I'm saving that. My wife and I haven't had a chance to sit down and plow into that, but we will.
You're gonna love it. It's great. And so, is it this Wednesday you're on Sirius?
Yes, the night after, day after tomorrow, 9:00.
Excellent.
9 p.m. They have a show. I'm sorry. I wish I knew the name of it, but it's a regular show. And I'm gonna be. I have no idea how much they're gonna. You know, one on. But we're gonna talk Beatles.
Fantastic. Well, we'll be listening. Bob, we thank you. As always, great to talk with you, and we'll do it again soon.
Okay. So I'm just going to act naturally.
It's Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe with us here on Downtown. Talking Beatles, Celtics, Red Sox, and more. Boston Insiders brought to you always by The Ground Round. Happy hour pricing 3 to 6. Specials during games. Great service. Amazing food at your locally owned and operated Ground Round on the Alden Road in Bangor.